We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Nothing reminds me more that we as a patriot movement need to get our act together and get our heads out of the sand, because we've had our heads in the sand for quite a while now, and really understand who's running this show, how we have been infiltrated and diminished and managed and just absolutely compromised, than watching my Missouri legislature in action every year. Perhaps your state legislature is the same, but every year around May, right around the time that our legislature wraps up their session, and we have a yearly legislature. Some states are smart enough not to do it every year. We're not. We have this big production about how all of these fabulous bills that start out, you know, our legislature writes over in excess of 2,000 bills a year, and the big ones never seem to get anywhere, you know, and I've been watching this for a few years now, and most of what has been worthwhile has either been diminished, weakened, completely thrown out, squashed, whatever. For years, we've gotten absolutely nowhere in advancing freedom, advancing personal liberty, advancing state sovereignty, and our Republican majority, veto-proof majority, House and Senate, cannot seem to move the ball down the road as far as securing the Missouri liberties and freedoms for Missourians here in our state. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We have several issues that we're going to discuss tonight. Ours happen to be specifically Missouri-related, but I bet if you're not in Missouri, a lot of this looks familiar. We've had several big issues on our agenda, our legislative agenda this year. We've had a tax decrease, which I'm telling you, folks, is nothing but Yankee Doodle. Common Core, we're battling Common Core in here just like everybody else across the country. I'll tell you later why it's not going to go anywhere at all. We had a Second Amendment Preservation Act come across the desks of the legislators this year that I think is going to be completely sabotaged, not only by the establishment Republicans in our House and our Senate, but maybe also by the author and chief proponent of this legislation. We'll have Frida Keogh on of Missouri Precinct Project to talk about the paper ballot issue and why we can't kick that can down the road. Right to work has been an issue in this state. We're not going to get it this session. And in fact, we'll talk about why I think our Republican leadership is trying to sabotage it for good. And tonight, I am very happy to announce that I have Dave Court on with me, Mr. Hour of Truth, Mr. Second Amendment, things that we disagree on. We're back together again, Dave and I. He's going to speak a little bit about another issue that's been going on in Missouri, and I think it's a Yankee Doodle issue. They're trying to impeach our governor, and we can't. We have a Democrat governor, Jay Nixon. Most of you know him. He was in the national spotlight last year when he helped the federal government seize control of all our driver's license records. This year, they're trying to impeach him on other issues. And Dave's with me tonight to talk a little bit about that. Dave, thank you for joining me tonight. Oh, Dave. Okay, Dave stepped away.
We'll try to get him back. I didn't. Oh, there I am.
There you are.
Here I am. Yeah.
Hi, Dave.
Yeah, I had my mic muted. I'm sorry. Hi, Lisa. How are you? It's great to be back. I love talking to you.
I love talking to you, too. Someday we're going to get together and we're going to hash out this
Article 5.
Yeah. Article 5 thing,
You're welcome. You're welcome any Friday or Saturday night, and I'll be glad to come here and talk with you about it any time.
Okay, cool.
I like talking about that. It's dead, of course, in this year's legislature, as you've mentioned. It's going to die a quiet death.
I'm sad about that, but you know, maybe there are some other opportunities. You and I disagree fervently over this issue, Dave, but we're both trying to get to the same ends.
Oh, absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
We just disagree about how to get there.
Yeah, there's several things that good people can disagree about. You know, if you'll track back and read, the Federalists and Anti-Federalists, for example, if you'll read both sides of that argument, you'll find founding fathers who had passionate disagreements on things, but they all wanted the same outcome in the end, with slightly different, you know, different approaches, with slightly different tweaks here and there, but they were all liberty lovers. They all wanted an independent, free-thinking, motivated people to have their own country, where they were all responsible for themselves and a limited, minimal government.
Right. Well, we have an issue here in Missouri.
And
I don't know if you heard the show last week. We spoke to a couple of state reps from Oklahoma who really just did an outstanding thing. They're going after the Supreme Court members in their state. They're impeaching half their Supreme Court, which up until this point, you know, I've been screaming about it for years now. Impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. It's a tool that the legislature has to hold people accountable. It's one of the reasons our government has gotten so out of control, is because there's no accountability attached to any of the actions of anybody who's in an elected position or any position of authority, it seems like. And this session, the Republican legislature put forth legislation to impeach the governor on what grounds?
Well, there are three articles of impeachment moving right now. One is H.R. 380. It's Nick Marshall's article of impeachment. I've agreed with you openly and loudly that this is a Yankee Doodle piece. It cites the governor's infraction as having issued an executive order unconstitutionally that allows gay couples whose marriage is recognized by a state where gay marriage is legal, and who either move to Missouri or who leave Missouri to get married and then come back, to file joint state returns. Now, I believe this is politically motivated, and I believe that this particular article of impeachment has no legs under it at all. If the House of Representatives should impeach him on this article and it actually go to a trial, I think that even a mediocre criminal defense attorney could get Nixon out of this. And the reason is because the legislature, if they want to prove that they're serious about this, has got to do one thing that gives Nixon standing in making that executive order. And that is, if you'll recall, in Missouri, there is statutory provision that says if you file a joint federal return, you have to file a combined Missouri return. Missouri does have a constitutional provision that says this state only recognizes marriage between a man and a woman. However, we have this still standing statutory thing that says if you file a joint federal return, which if you are legally married by a state that recognizes your marriage, you may file a joint federal return, then you have to file a combined Missouri return. There was no move at all to change this statute. by this entire session. So I don't think that one's going to fly. And then we get Rick Bratton's 923, which attempts to impeach Nixon for not punishing anyone for the DOR violations and the other violations, the Missouri Highway Patrol violations that you were talking about, and releasing the CCW list to the federal government. Once again, if the House of Representatives should impeach Governor Nixon, then I don't believe that's going to stand, because you're not going to find, you're talking a personnel action here. If they're serious about this, they should have followed through with their hearings and with that they let drop quietly,
as you noted,
very early in the session, to either find a smoking gun to tie Nixon directly to that.
Well, they had it.
Or they should just move, exactly, they should just move on what they have to impeach Nixon for his participation in that, an illegal participation.
Absolutely.
It is against the law in Missouri to release that information to the federal government. We have statutorily said that we are not going to participate in the Real ID Act, and parts of this system, the DOR system, were in fact part of the Real ID Act, in fact made us full participants in the Real ID Act.
Oh, we had written confirmation from Janet Napolitano that we had participated
exactly
in Real
right.
ID.
That's exactly right.
I think
right.
that committee was
Nixon.
Formed. Yeah, that committee was formed to get Jay Nixon off the hook. That committee was not formed to find impeachment.
Exactly.
That was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen in my life.
But then comes the go ahead. I'm sorry, Lisa.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Then the article of impeachment that has real legs under it is Mike Moon's H.R. 476, which impeaches Governor Nixon for, and you made some mention of our veto-proof majority. We haven't had a veto-proof majority now in the House for some time. The governor appointed a member of the House of Representatives to a Republican member of the House of Representatives to a job and parole. He later was not confirmed for that position and is still, though, because he had to resign his position to take the job, not a member of the House of Representatives. As you know, what's his name, took that ran for that office in Washington, D.C. Jones?
In D.C.?
Yes, Jones. Yeah, Jones. Don't you remember in the last election when what's her name won the election and then resigned 2 days later?
Wasn't
Jones. And then Jones. So there's another Republican missing. And then Representative Ellinger passed away in April. So we are but we got to go all the way back to Jones's seat. It's been almost a year since Jones resigned to take the House seat he had won in Washington, D.C. Now, the Missouri State Constitution requires the governor to issue a writ of election to fill those vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
And he has not done so. The statutory requirement specifically says without delay. Now, you can argue, I guess, to some point that some period of time would qualify as without delay, but over a year cannot even be argued. So basically, and here's the egregious part of this. For over a year, a quarter of a million Missourians will not be represented in the seat of government.
Mm-hmm.
There are a quarter million people in the state of Missouri that are not participants in our representative republic. And I believe that H.R. 476 is serious grounds for impeachment. Now, what happens is 476 gets introduced in the first week of the legislative session. Tim Jones makes it clear publicly.
We lost you, Dave.
It is exactly the right way to go. Go ahead.
We lost you there for a second. So go ahead. You're fine now. So Tim Jones makes it clear?
Makes it.
We're losing you. We got something interfering.
Am I here or gone?
You're here now. We're losing you. There's some interference, but go ahead.
That he doesn't.
You're cutting in and out. Dave, I think we lost you. Can you hear us? Well, maybe Dave can call back in. This is a really important topic. I really want to be able to finish it with him. He's going to try to call us right back and get a better connection on that. Anyway, the point is on these articles of impeachment that I think Dave will come back and make in just a second is that, folks, we have in Missouri a veto-proof majority Republican legislature, okay? For all we heard for years and years and years was that we need to get a Republican majority. We need to get a Republican majority. And the folks worked hard to get Republicans elected. And now that we have a Republican supermajority in the legislature, all they're talking about now is the 2016 campaigns and how we need a Republican governor. Well, I think we're going to be hard-pressed to get a Republican anything if they don't start behaving like Republicans and take advantage of the authority that the people have given them. And Dave's back now. Dave, let's talk about why legislation was introduced in the beginning of the session, what happened to it?
Can you hear me better now?
I'm good now, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm sorry about that. I don't know whether it's me or Skype or what, but anyway. So finally, 3 weeks ago, this thing gets referred to committee, and I'm telling you, it took some grassroots pressure just to get it referred to a committee.
Why?
And then it sat in the committee. And thank you to your grassroots listeners. Finally, we got a committee hearing, and then they drug this committee hearing out over 2 weeks, two different Wednesdays or two different Thursdays. During the recess, they had kind of a hearing, and they drug it out over 2 weeks, of course, because the folks who wanted to be there had to drive all the way to Jeff City 2 weeks in a row. Then the thing set. After the hearing, and finally, day before yesterday, Stanley Cox, the chair of that committee, announced that he just didn't have the support within the committee to vote this out of committee and to the floor.
Amazing.
Only to find out yesterday in a flurry of activity that was that was a blatant lie. The committee had been whipped. The votes were there to get it out, and he hadn't even conferred with the other members of the committee before he went to the press and said, "Well, we're not even going to bring this to a vote. We don't have the support." He hadn't called the sponsors of any of the legislative pieces to say, "Well, we're not going to vote this out." What's going on now and what we need help with is there is a method in the House of Representatives to force an article out of committee. It's called discharge petition. It needs 55 signatures of the members of the House of Representatives to force this item out of committee, and then it goes directly to the calendar. And we need people to call their representatives and urge them to sign this discharge petition. But that's basically where that's at now. I am totally behind 476, have been from the start. You know, Mike Moon was testifying in the hearing, and it was pointed out to him by a questioner. You know, It's 476 days from the vacancy till the election that Nixon finally did call in August. After this session was over, Nixon finally did call a special election in August of this year to fill those seats. That election will be coexistent with primaries. So there's going to be some confusion there, but. Anyway,
yeah. How does that work?
Someone asked Moon. There will be a question on your ballot that says, "Which one of these people do you want to represent you in Jefferson City?" The person will be sworn in, and then replaced. They may attend the veto session, but then they'll be replaced or have to run for that seat again
in November
immediately. In November, yeah.
What a mess and an expensive mess.
Yeah. An expensive mess. So Moon was asked, and I like Mike Moon. I don't know if you've talked to him yet or not, but you should. He was asked, but Roy Blunt, at this one time, he took like 310 days to fill a seat. Would you have voted to impeach Roy Blunt? And Mike Moon says, well, yeah, not yes, but heck yes. This isn't about Republican or Democratic politics. This is about a quarter of a million Missourians who don't have a voice here in this capital.
Without question. These people are playing politics with your representation, folks.
They're
furthering their political careers based on the manipulation of, political rules within the legislature.
Yeah. Now, surprisingly, to me, I'm sure, but probably not surprisingly to you, the establishment Republicans have mounted a formidable, what may be one of the hottest races in the state, right down here out here in the country in Missouri, by mounting a primary challenger to Mike Moon. I'm actually postponing this. I asked if I could join you tonight to push my $1 million message, which I'm going to go ahead and postpone now till Thursday, Friday, Saturday of next week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday of the week following, six nights, when we're going to spend 2 hours per night, 12 hours per week, or 12 hours in the 2 weeks. We are going to get 100,000 Missourians to put a $10 bill in the mail for $1 million. We are going to send a message. I'm going to tell you, and the reason I'm waiting is because I want to see how this discharge petition goes. There are some people on the House Judiciary Committee who can actually save themselves from the $1 million message by signing on to this petition, the ones who claim that they would have voted for this if it had been actually come to a vote. And I believe them, people like Elmer, I believe that he would have voted for it. But what we're going to, the two names that will be on this list are Cox, the chairman of this committee. He is not running for re-election. He is termed out. He is running for a circuit judgeship up in Sedalia, in Pettis County. He does have an opponent. This is not about good guy, bad guy. This is not about anything but sending a message. We're going to get $1 million to his primary opponent, and we're going to send a message finally from the grassroots that said, you ignore the will of the people of Missouri at your own peril. And then we're going to put Mike Moon on the list, and we're going to put $1 million in his campaign to oust or to beat back this challenge by the elitists in Jefferson City to his seat. This is a guy who really believes that this is the guy who introduced the legislation for the Convention of States. This is the guy who introduced and got behind the anti-Agenda 21 legislation. This is the guy who worked hard for anti-Common Core legislation. This is the guy who worked this one serious article of impeachment. This is the guy who put himself on the line against all of the Republicans. This is the guy, and he's a freshman. He just now joined the legislature in a special election to fill a vacant seat late last term. Ran to keep that seat last time, virtually unopposed. He's a farmer from Clever, and he believes in the Constitution. He believes in the Second Amendment. He believes in the Bill of Rights. He believes in the state constitution, and that's something we find hard to come across
to
in Jefferson City. He believes that the state constitution is what governs us here in Missouri, not the Bill of Rights. And we're going to put $1 million down there to beat back this. So what I want is I want people calling in next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, or the Thursday, Friday, Saturday after that, saying, yes, I want to send a message from somewhere in Missouri. I want to put $10 in the mail. If we can get 100,000 people, that's not a lot of people in the state across the state of Missouri, to say I'll invest $10 to send a message, then we can really make a difference here. We can really send a message. We can really make some noise. We can really say the grassroots count.
Mm-hmm.
The people matter.
Right, and especially a message like that is so important right now, since we are just on the backside of the primaries that happened yesterday across the country,
in which
every single Tea Party candidate lost, and the establishment Republican were sending out tweets gloating that they squashed the Tea Party.
You know,
amazing.
And that goes back to what you and I are here for, Lisa. I mean, we are not going to fix this problem at the federal level. We have to do this at the state level. We have to do this state by state. And if Missouri can be the bellwether state, if Missouri can be the one who stands proud to these other states and says, look, we've taken our state back, we've taken back our state sovereignty, we've told the federal government we're in charge of our state, then more states will go along. But you are not going to beat this problem at the federal level until the states can say, that Constitution belongs to us, it doesn't belong to you, we are the compact of states that own this country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, it's a states' rights, folks. All politics is local. And you can send the biggest message to the federal government by redecorating your state legislature.
Yes.
You know, it's just about redecorating that place, putting different faces in those places, in those offices, in your own state legislature. We hope to do it here in Missouri, but it really needs to take place all across the country. It's absolutely out of control, and it's easier to do it on a local level, absolutely, than going against all that great big PAC money on a federal level, for sure.
Yes, it is.
All right,
okay. That's all I had for you tonight, Lisa. Remember, it's next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday after that is the $1 million message. We're going to ask 100,000 Missourians. That's about as many people as there are there in St. Charles, about as many people as there are here in Springfield. We're going to ask that many people across the state of Missouri to say, I will send $10 to these two campaigns. There may be three campaigns, so we may be asking people to invest $30 to send a clear and concise message.
Okay, very good. And you're going to give us all the details on how to do that. Are we just donating directly to the campaign of Mike Moon, or
yes,
is there going to be a setup for that?
It's going to be too late, Lisa. It's going to be too late. We're talking 3.5 weeks to the primaries. Yeah,
okay.
I don't have the technical know-how to set up a website, set up the PayPal accounts to make that all happen. We're just going to ask people. We're going to give out addresses. We're going to give out candidates. Websites that are already set up. We're going to ask people to just pledge to donate $10.
Okay, very good, Dave. We'll have you back on, and we'll get that information out next week when we're ready to roll. And it's never too late, you know, to get in touch with Mike Noon anyway. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
Okay, we're gonna take, bye-bye. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony, put a feather in his hand and called it macaroni.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back, folks. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And you're going to hear a recurring theme from me probably a lot over the next few weeks, probably throughout the summer. We've got to get our heads out of the sand, folks. We as a patriot movement have been so seriously infiltrated and diminished that it is absolutely, if there was ever any doubt in your mind before, it is absolutely the intention of the establishment Republican Party to squash the patriot movement and squash our agenda of state sovereignty, individual sovereignty, small government, limited government, fiscal responsibility. I mean, the Republicans are no different than the Democrats, and they will do anything at all to maintain their power hold. And one of the ways that they're doing that, folks, is, I think, there are a lot of ways. They are manipulating elections. You can't get voter ID passed. You can't get a lot of initiatives passed through your state legislature to get a hold on of this on the corruption and the malfeasance that goes on during elections. And with me tonight, I have Frieda Q of Missouri Precinct Project. Frieda has been working tirelessly on a lot of issues, but she has been just focused like a laser beam on this paper ballot thing. Missouri has had an initiative in our legislature, and it's been circulating through the grassroots for a while, on getting rid of these electronic voter machines. And these electronic voter machines are just wrought with problems. Election fraud has been a problem forever. But if you have a paper trail to maintain something to fall back on when you have computer problems, electrical problems, it certainly gives you a way to stay on the right track. And for some reason, Frieda's going to tell us, we're having a problem getting these Republican legislators to sign on to the paper ballot initiative. Frieda, thanks for being with me tonight.
Well, thank you for having me on tonight. Actually, there is a lot of Republican legislators that are with us on this issue. There is one fellow that told us he will not let the bill come to the floor, and he has the power to do that, and that is okay. Our floor leader, John Beal.
Oh, don't you just love it? So he's in leadership. He's got a lot of control. But let's just back up real quick. Just give me a brief history of what the paper ballot is and how it works.
The paper ballot would make the our bill would make the paper ballot the official ballot across the state of Missouri. There currently are about 50 counties that are already using the paper ballot only. It is in the large metropolitan areas where we use the electronic voting machines. Our bill will eliminate the use of electronic voting machines. One of the primary reasons is because the Board of Elections or the Election Authority do not have access to what the software that operates those machines. They claim they do, but they don't. They overlay the software, they say, who is being voted for in the election, but they have no access to the underlying software. I asked the specific question, how do you know there is no virus in the software? Well, we do a logic test on the machines, but they don't have access to the software. They just make sure that their voting ballots run correctly. So there is no control over the machines. The machines were designed to run on batteries. Then they discovered if the batteries run low, if the voltage runs low, the machine loses votes. If you have a ballot that has 5 or 6 issues on it, it doesn't lose the whole ballot. It might lose 1 or 2 of the issues that one votes on. So that you can never trace how many votes were actually lost. They did very extensive computer testing in Florida and Ohio and found that in 3 precincts in Florida, these machines lost over 10,000 votes. That's significant. Florida, Absolutely. You know, Florida, we all watched Florida in 2000, and everybody thought we had to have electronic voting because who wants to go through all that paper counting that they did with the hanging chads? So everybody went to electronic voting. Well, it turns out that the voting machines are not reliable. When Florida had this issue that I was just explaining, they went mm-hmm. back to paper. California, in 2007, they decertified the machines, the same machines that we're using in St. Louis County, and they went back to paper. 18 states across the nation have gone back to paper because they all can see that electronic voting does not work. You can manipulate it. You have no control over it. And you don't know what the vote count is. If there's ever a recount, call the Board of Election and ask them, how do they conduct a recount? They run the voting tabulations from the electronic machines again, and hopefully they get the same results. And then they go through all the paper ballots and to try to determine its intent of voter. But they cannot recount anything that's on an electronic machine because they can't get in there. Whatever is in there, that's what comes out.
And your right to have your vote counted. Yeah, your right to have your vote counted is lost forever.
It's lost. And that is in our Constitution, that our votes should be open and honest. Well, you cannot have an open and honest election on a machine that you cannot know what the results are. How do you know that so-and-so voted for X and the result is Y? I'm a roving deputy. I circulate amongst 20 different polling places in every election. I have seen where people push in one name, somebody that they want to vote for, and the machine comes back and tells them you voted for another name. Now, does that give you a lot of confidence?
There were endless stories after the 2012 election about voter issues on those electronic machines and counties that, you know, never cast a single vote for Obama or never cast a single vote for Romney. So we got to know. If you don't, you got to have a plan B, folks, to fall back on. So Frieda, let's go and bring us forward to today. We've got legislation going through the legislature. We got 2 weeks left in the session. What's the problem?
1 week.
1 week left in the session.
House
so what's
bill
the problem?
was approved in the Senate. It came back to the House. We ran it through Paul Kirkman's downsizing government because we didn't trust the person that runs the election committee. She is influenced by Mr. Deal and by Mr. Tony Duggar. Those two do not like they like electronic voting machines. So we took it to Paul Kirkman's committee, and he picked it up. They approved it. Whenever the bill has to go through a hearing or a committee, it passes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no dissent. It passes. It has gone through the Rules Committee on Monday. It is now right at the door to be put on the House calendar. Tim Jones assured me this morning that he would get on the House calendar. He is for the bill.
Okay,
it
so,
is John
so what
Deal
is the,
that is stopping it.
Has he said why he opposes the bill? I mean, it should be a no-brainer for a Republican. We've been screaming about voter fraud and election fraud for years. What's his problem?
He thinks you can do more fraud with paper ballots. You can stuff a ballot box. And I do not disagree, but that problem can be fixed if you have the right amount of poll workers, and that's something else I've been preaching. We need more Republicans to sign up for poll workers. If you have a Democrat and a Republican watching a particular station, unless they're both in collusion, you cannot do voter fraud or paper ballot stuffing on a paper ballot. Anyway, John Deal, he ran the Board of Election in St. Louis County. In 2007, there was a public hearing by people deciding or voting on do they want paper or do they want machines. The vote of that public hearing was 98-2 in favor of keeping the paper ballot. The meeting was over. John Deal walked into his office and signed the contract to buy the machines.
Hmm.
So he's the guy that bought the machines, and I guess he's too bullheaded to go back on his word and say, well, I guess I was wrong. But, you know, 7 years ago, everybody thought the machines were the solution to our problems. Now we know better. We have enough experience. The machines are not the solutions. We have to get rid of the machines. Anyway, we've whipped votes over the last 3 days. We're close to 80. That's what it takes to pass. There's
right.
Probably a few more that we haven't gotten to. The only reason why this bill would not make it through the legislature is because John Deal does not like it. He said, he looked me straight in the face and poked his finger in my face and
oh
said,
my God.
This bill will never come to the floor. He's a bully.
This is
and
the
what
man.
Makes
okay, so
it even worse, Lisa, he is the speaker designate for next year.
Exactly. I was just going to talk about that.
We have another 2 years dealing with people that do not want to do what's right.
Yeah, this man is the floor majority leader, and assuming we keep the majority, he'll be the Speaker of the House.
Right.
The Speaker of the House. This is what the Speaker of the future. I mean, our current Speaker of the House has no respect for the constituency. So, and we're putting another one in right after him, just like him.
I have to say, I can talk to Tim Jones. He's willing to listen. For instance, we went to him in early summer last year and said, okay, Tim, what do we need to do in order to get this bill passed? And he told us. And we did exactly what he said. And all along, he has helped us out. So he did not stand in the way. But now, at some degree, does he care or does he have any say-so what the Speaker-elect wants? I don't know.
He may not have stood in the way. It remains to be seen as if he really helped you.
Right.
Right. So
I talk to him on a pretty regular basis, and he always returns my calls, which I appreciate. But, you know, you could also say he knows Deal isn't going to let the bill come to the floor, so he can support all he wants. It's not going to get us anywhere. But anyway, we have been calling Republicans. Most of them are in favor of it.
Mm-hmm.
We continue to call, and we urge people to call their legislators. And if they really want to get in the fight, call Mr. Deal. Tell him this bill needs to come to the floor. He needs to allow the representatives, our elected representatives in the state of Missouri, to vote on this. He cannot stand in the way of the people's vote. That's what
now,
I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, if he's supposed to be representing the wishes of the people and his position and his capacity in the leadership role that people have been telling him over and over again that they want the paper ballot, he needs to do the right thing and quit putting his personal feelings aside and do the right thing.
I asked him, I said, John, people across the state, more and more people across the state want this. Are you willing to stand in the way? And this is what he told me. I don't care what the people want.
Seriously, Sweetie? Said that to you?
Seriously.
Oh, that's just lovely. And I'm sure he's not primaried this season, election season. He's got a primary?
He is. Well, he has a Democrat opponent.
Oh, he's got a Democrat, but he's not got a Republican opponent.
No. He's going to stay right through.
Lovely. Just lovely. I think what it's going to take, Frieda, is some of these staunch Republicans losing their seats to Democrats before people start to wake up and say, you know, we're just done with this establishment agenda. We're done with it.
Right.
Well, okay.
You know, the Missouri Precinct Project was started for the purpose of getting people alerted at the ground level. People have to get involved locally. And we have to stop. I mean, you hear stories about school boards that are totally out of control. They do whatever they want. They don't listen to the parents. And parents just sit there and like, what am I going to do? People need to get involved, run for these positions, even if it takes several years, and start cleaning house. Same thing with municipalities. Municipalities do ordinances all the time. They raise their taxes. And then we just had an election in St. Louis County. 8.7% of the people in St. Louis County voted. That means 8.7% of the people decide your tax rates in your local municipalities, your property taxes, all of that is decided by your local officials, and we don't even bother to go vote.
That is so sad.
Yeah, and then we complain, right?
Right. Right.
Facebook is full of complainers.
Well, and it's usually the left. They're so good at getting their people out to vote. You know?
Yes. The left is very good. For instance, the left is very good of manning the polls. They're overrun with Democrats, with volunteers. How come the Republicans don't want to do that? That's the place where you start. You work at the polls and you stop malfeasance and you stop irregularities. And when you see something that's not right, you speak out. And don't be quiet when somebody says, oh, that's the way we've always done it. Know the rules and have a spine. That's what it takes.
There you go. You can't be afraid to vote people out of office, even Republicans. You can't be afraid
even
to vote them out of office. So, Frieda, real quick, give me just a rundown of the Missouri Precinct Project and how folks can get in touch with you.
They can get to us on Facebook. They can get to us on moprecinctproject.org. That's our website. We have a sign-up sheet on the website. But what we really want is people to get involved locally. We really don't, we don't have regular meetings. We don't have seminars or stuff or training sessions. We just want people, that's our constant message, we want people to get involved at the local level. Pay attention. Don't just complain. Go there and pay attention and do something about it.
And Missouri Precinct
that's
Project
our
is very, you folks are well connected across the state. You've got folks, you've got a network of folks put together all across the state in almost every precinct in the state of Missouri.
Yes.
And big issues that come up, you guys know about it first, and you guys are the ones who are alerting the folks and sounding the call for action. You guys
Let
have done
a fabulous
job.
Let me give you an example. Last week, our bill was sent to the Rules Committee. The Rules Committee has to vote on it to make sure it continues. We talked to the lady on the Rules Committee, Jeannie Riddle, and she says, well, I'm for the bill, but I'm probably not going to put it for a vote until the last week. Because I have to do what the leadership wants.
Mm-hmm.
We told people to call her. In one day, in 3 hours, they had 75 calls. They asked us, please stop. They got the message. So Mark can generate phone calls. And when we send something out, we ask, it goes to a lot of people that have their own email lists. We tell everybody, send it to your email list. And so there's a lot of people that read that stuff. And that's that's what we primarily do, is to just educate people, inform people. When there's something going on, we tell them about it. We rally the people, you know, make a phone call, do whatever, go to this meeting or that meeting. And I think that's where we are most effective.
Yep, yep. You guys have done a great job. And when we had the problems with the watershed issue, the Agenda 21 thing, last, you guys were instrumental in helping get that information out. So, folks, I'm telling you, go to Missouri Precinct Project, get that information. If you're a little skittish about how to get involved, then at least be informed, because nobody's putting that information out like MOPS is doing. Frida,
you know, when we started 3 years ago, we didn't know what we were doing, or we didn't think how can two ladies, I mean, Julie Sofka and myself, how can we have an impact? But it is amazing how much influence we now have. People listen to us across the state, and we have people in other states that want to copy what we're doing.
Yeah,
so it works.
It does. And Dave and I were speaking earlier. Yeah, all politics is local, folks. You can make changes that will wave across the country, but you got to start at a local level, and that's what you do with Missouri Precinct Project.
You know, we don't worry about what's going on in Washington. There is nothing I can do about that, but I can change starting at the local level.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us the skinny about John Deal. I think we're going to have to teach that man a lesson.
He needs to give him a call. He needs to be overwhelmed with phone calls. And he probably is going to get mad about it, and he probably is not going to do anything, but he needs to hear that there's people that want this done.
Well, he doesn't seem to be too concerned about how people feel here, so I'm not really overly concerned about how he feels. We'll just take care of business on our own.
One of my partners said today, should we really do that? That seems kind of, you know, hitting below the belt. And I said, I don't care anymore if we're hitting John Deal below the belt. He doesn't care about us.
You know, you should never feel like you're hitting below the belt when you're discussing. These people work for us, not the other way around. And when you get high and mighty, you know, and feel like you do not care about what the electorate wants, it's time to change somebody's attitude. And a phone call is certainly not going to be a problem. That's the least of his worries, getting phone calls. Frida, thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. We're going to take another quick break. And we'll be right back.
Yankee Doodle came to town riding on a pony. Put a feather in his hand and called it macaroni.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
My fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. I've got a feeling that the tide
is turning. We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio, and this is Culture Vigilante. And some of the things that we talked about at the top of the hour, you know, tonight we're going over all of the issues that are hot-button issues here at the end of the Missouri legislature session, legislative session. Every state has their issues. Our session wraps up in a little over a week. Thank God. You know, I think somebody really ought to introduce legislation next year so that to only bring those folks to Jefferson City every other year like Texas, which I think is a great system. You know, we have a situation here in Missouri, and it's not just here in Missouri. It's all across the country, and I rant about it all the time. And, you know, people do not like it when their idols are exposed. But You know, I can't think of one person in political life that maybe just doesn't have at least a little bit of their own agenda. And, you know, anybody who has chosen politics as a career has an agenda. They're not interested 100% in going to Jefferson City or going to Washington, D.C. or Springfield or whatever your capital is and go in there just to do the people's work. They're interested in it for themselves, at least to some degree. And when folks have an ulterior motive, when they have an alternate agenda, you cannot put your full faith and trust in those folks. You have got to be ever vigilant in maintaining a watchful eye and scrutinize their every single move. Now, a lot of times folks in elective office will do something here or do something there that's very Yankee Doodle. You know, it sounds great. And sometimes it is great. They're throwing you this bone and it's fabulous, but then they go off in another direction on another bill. But because they've helped us with this or because they've helped us with that, or the old Ronald Reagan, you know, a lot of conservatives fall back on the old Ronald Reagan saying, you know, as long as we're okay on 80% of the issues, we're okay. You know, the establishment Republicans, the controlled opposition, which is something we're going to talk about a lot in the next few weeks, has manipulated their way into the conservative hearts to get people to believe this crap so that they can control you. You know, it's just not that hard, folks. It's just not that hard to be an elected representative. You've got a guidebook. There's an owner's manual. There's an instruction manual. It's called your constitution. Every state has one, and the federal government has one. And it's not hard to read. It's not hard to interpret. It should be easy. And you should do better than 80%. You should expect better than 80%. And you should expect it from both sides of the aisle. You know, you should expect that even from Democrats. You've got a guidebook to follow. So here's the problem. Okay, so we have been. It is just human nature for people to want to follow. You know, we idolize people. You know, we put people in positions of power, and all of a sudden, we idolize them and we work for them. And it's all fun and warm and fuzzy to be able to rub elbows with these people that are in these positions of power. And we just look at them differently than we should as our public servants. So here's something that went through Missouri. I kind of wanted to talk about this just a little bit. Okay, Missouri last year went through a big hubbub about not being able to pass a tax cut. Okay, they had this legislation that went through the House and went through the Senate and da-da-da-da-da, and they just couldn't get the votes to pass this tax cut, one-half of 1% tax cut. Or they passed it, but they couldn't get the override, I think is what happened. So they got it through this year, and they got through the override. And you can bet your bottom one-half of 1% that this is going to be the hook that the Republicans hang their hat on as they campaign across the Missouri in 2014 and 2016 elections to get reelected. And let me tell you about this one half of 1% tax cut, because there was Representative Jim Hansen sent out a release day before yesterday, something about that, about this tax cut. So folks, don't be upgrading the house. Don't buy that boat. You know, I would say don't go out and buy a new pair of shoes with what you're going to get out of this tax cut. The truth about tax relief for Missouri families and businesses is, as it was written in this statement by Jim Hansen, District 40 of Missouri, in an attempt to hide the fact that he opposes much-needed tax relief, Missouri families and businesses, Governor Nixon has once again embarked on a smoke and mirrors campaign designed to fabricate non-existent flaws in the tax cut bill approved by the Missouri General Assembly. Okay, so here's the other thing, too. Here's the other Yankee Doodle. Okay, our Republican supermajority, this is the same supermajority that hasn't been able to get diddly done in the last several years that has anything to do with liberty tax cuts, downsizing government, passing Second Amendment Preservation Acts, getting, you know, you just heard from Frida Kahlo, we've got a floor majority leader who doesn't give a whip about what the people think about anything. They're going to use this. Now all of a sudden, we need a Republican governor. You know, we've got a supermajority that can't override a Democrat governor's problems, you know, issues that he sends back. But if we had a Republican governor, all would be right with the world. Well, I'm telling you, folks, if we can't get the supermajority to behave like conservatives, why in the heck do they think that we can get that all our problems are going to go away if we have a Republican governor? So that's going to be the next big swing. It's been out there for a while. I'm sure you've heard it. You may be hearing it in your own state if you don't live in Missouri. Let's see. The governor has been disingenuous with the people of Missouri as he has claimed the bill would eliminate the top income tax bracket and cut taxes by $4.8 billion annually. The truth is SB 509 represents a well-reasoned, reasonable approach to tax relief for all Missourians. Okay, you know, I don't have a problem with this tax cut passing, but here's the deal on this tax cut. And I'm telling you, folks, don't spend it all in one place. SB 509 will responsibly cut the tax burden for Missouri families, and I'm not quite sure how that's going to work, because I'll tell you, Missouri taxes are very burdensome. They're huge. The businesses by $620 million annually, while also safeguarding funding to vital state services such as education. Okay, and that's another thing. They always hang their hat on education. And we spend more money on education than just about anybody I know, and we'll get to Common Core too in a little bit. Individual income taxes. SB 509 makes individual income taxes, reduces them by one-half of 1% over a period of 5 years beginning in 2017. Okay, so one-half of 1% of your taxes are going to be reduced over the period of 5 years, and that doesn't even start until 2017. This is what, 2014? So you're not. This doesn't even go into effect for 3 years, and God knows what they'll do to this bill and modify it within the next 3 years. It's never going to happen, folks. Small business income tax deduction. Okay, beginning in 2017, small businesses will be allowed to deduct a maximum of 25% of business income over a period of no less than 5 years, beginning in 2017. And, you know, and cutting taxes is always a good thing for businesses in your area. Our state is just huge on tax incentives. I mean, they just give tax incentives away left and right. I don't have a problem with cutting taxes for businesses. Tax incentives I'm not so crazy about. This tax cut is specifically structured to ease the tax burden for small business. Small businesses make up more than 90%. Okay, yada, yada. This will increase the personal income tax exemption amount by $500 for those whose adjusted gross income is less than $20,000. That's about it, folks. That's about where the, you know, so folks who make less than $20,000 are going to see an adjustment in their taxes by $500 a year. The tax benefits of SB 509 are triggered when the highest net gross revenue collected in the previous three fiscal years is exceeded by $150 million. So the ability to even trigger this tax initiative weighs on the previous 3 years of $150 million in gross revenue. Okay, let's throw another roadblock up into this tax cut. Okay, beginning in 2017, SB 509 also requires brackets of Missouri tax table income to be adjusted for inflation. Okay, no, if we're going to cut taxes, Where's all the entitlement spending going? Is anybody talking about that? Anyway, this is the most ridiculous. This is going to Yankee Doodle spew out of trumpets all across Missouri. This is what you're going to be hearing constantly for the next 2 to 4 years about how they, you know, it's just absolutely unbelievable. Oh, where should we go from here? Right to work. It's not going anywhere, folks. And this year it shouldn't. You know, the House of Representatives passed out a bill that puts right to work on the August ballot this year. They couldn't stand on their own two feet and vote on this issue on their own, make a stand up to the unions and the special interests to support right to work. When Missourians support right to work, they want to put it on the August ballot. Why do they want to put it on the August ballot, Tim Jones? And he's the one who's been doing the biggest Yankee Doodle on this whole right to work deal. Why does Tim Jones want to put this on the August ballot? Because he knows that the unions will come into Missouri with tens of thousands of dollars and campaign against it in a low voter turnout election in August, so that we will never have to worry about right to work, or at least have the issue come before the legislature for the next 30 years, because that's what happened 30 years ago, was that they put it on the ballot and it failed and it hasn't come up since. So you'll never be able to convince me that this isn't a complete sabotage by the Republican Party. Right to work is dead in Missouri. There's no way that you're going to get Republicans to come out and support it. They don't have the backbone to do so. It's gone. It'll be really interesting to see it's not going to happen this year. It'll be really interesting to see if anything comes of it next year or in 2016. But you certainly don't ever want to put it on the ballot. And if you do put it on the ballot, you don't want to put it on the ballot in August. If you're going to do it, why wouldn't you put it out on a general election when you have your higher voter turnout? Because you really don't want it to happen. We're really being controlled. Our strings are really being pulled by the people who are the special interests and the unions. So our Republican Party is being run by the unions. I've always been a believer of that. Okay, couple things. Let's talk about Common Core. Common Core ain't going to happen yet either this year. pretty darn sure. You know, we've got a group of folks here in Missouri who have been instrumental in bringing Common Core to light, not only in Missouri but across the country. They have formed a network of lobbyists, citizen lobbyists. They've spent almost all of their time in Jefferson City this year. They've developed a handful of great pieces of legislation that went through the legislature, most of them to be absolutely stomped on and trampled and killed completely. There were a couple of pieces that have survived up to this point. And up to this point, it's just not looking good. There was a data collection piece, because most of you know about the data collection component of Common Core. They're collecting every bit of data on you, your student, your home life, whether you own guns, you know, if you drink caffeine, you know, if you beat your wife, if you don't beat your wife, whatever. They're collecting data on it, and that's what Common Core is all about. Whether or not that piece of legislation goes through, there's not much happening on it now. We've got about a week left in the session, and it's uncertain at this point with all of the shenanigans and the shuffling around that goes on in the last minutes of the legislature where that bill is exactly. But it's highly unlikely that that's going to go anywhere. They also had a bill, House Bill 1490. House Bill 1490 originally started out as an elimination of Common Core in Missouri. And Indiana passed a similar bill just recently. They just got that through this year. Our House bill is not doing well. We have an update from the folks at Missouri Coalition Against Common Core. Their update is Common Core has moved into conference committee because I believe that the Senate has loaded it up with amendments. So it goes back to the House into conference committee to resolve the differences between the House and the Senate versions. The Senate has announced their committee appointees, Emery, Pierce, Lamping, Chappelle Nadal, and Keaveney. We are waiting on House leadership to appoint their three members. Rep Barr will be one of them. There will be two more, one Republican and one Democrat. House floor leader Rep Deal, who we've spoken of previously, pushed for the bill to go to the conference and has also requested that to be on the committee. It's up to the minority leader to appoint the Democrat. Okay, so when a bill goes into conference, it's a negotiation session. The House sent the Senate one bill. The Senate amended the hell out of it, And in order for it to go back down, it would either have to be voted on in the floor as it is, as it comes back from the Senate and accepted in those on those terms, or they have to negotiate a deal in conference. One possible outcome is that the committee will get bogged down, vote to dissolve, and issue a conference report which details the differences between the two bills. This report could go to the House, and they could choose to vote on the Senate version of the bill. Given the expected difficulties in passing a revised conference committee bill out of the Senate, this is preferable. This is the preferable option. Senator Silvey seems poised to filibuster the bill if it comes back to the Senate. So if it comes out of the conference and the House votes it and sends it back to the Senate, it'll for sure get filibustered and it will die. These are all legal rules. This is how things work in the legislature. But while they legitimately have the right to do these things, I question their legitimacy because, you know, they're just all stall tactics. Again, we have a Republican supermajority. Common Core is a no-brainer. It's not good for anybody, and nobody seems to want to be able to do the job, to get the job done, get rid of Common Core in Missouri. So a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication by a lot of good people will probably go unanswered this session, unfortunately, unless, of course, you call. Get on the phone and call your representatives, folks. Call your senators, call your representatives. You know, they see the same faces walking down the halls in Jefferson City and in their state legislatures every year, but they never hear from you. They don't pay it. To some degree, they don't really care about those faces in Jefferson City. If they start getting phone calls, they take a different tack. So there's no problem with getting on the phone and giving them a call. Okay, I got two emails in my mailbox today from Ron Calzone. Ron Calzone has been the chief proponent of the Second Amendment Preservation Act in Missouri for a couple of years now. He's drafted legislation and he's worked it through the legislature in Jefferson City. Last year, it just completely failed, and he brought it back again this year. I will tell you, folks, I've reached out to Ron Calzone several times to come on my radio program and discuss this important piece of legislation with the grassroots and with the folks here on the show, and I either get no return from him or he declines. Now, there's a problem. You know, this is raising red flags all over the place. You know, why wouldn't he want to come on and discuss the issue and give information to the grassroots about this piece of legislation? Missourians are as fired up about the Second Amendment as any state, and the bill is really worth the salt that it's trying to push through the state. You know, it needs some support, and the people need to know about it. Okay, well, I reached out to him today again, and he declined. He said he had other things to do, and he had to set his priorities, and we weren't one of them. Fine. I will not be contacting Ron Calzone anymore if he wishes to come on. He's got my phone number. But here's the deal. I got on the phone, and I had a conversation with Doug Funderburk after I didn't hear from Ron Calzone. And, you know, like I said earlier in the show, controlled opposition. I'm not exactly sure who's working for us. I'm not exactly sure that everything in the Second Amendment Preservation Act is really, really a good thing. I think that there are problems with this bill, and I'm not sure that it's really set out to do all of the things that it's set out to do. While on the other hand, I don't believe for one minute that the Republicans are really trying to bring about state sovereignty and strengthen our Second Amendment freedoms either. After you hear this interview today with Doug Funderburk, who is the sponsor of this bill, and pay particular attention to the end of the interview, because it's very telling about where people's heads are and where they are not as far as really supporting the people of Missouri or anywhere else for that matter. Folks, you really have to take a hard look at who's running the show. I mean, everybody's got an agenda. You know, people put forth legislation all the time, and sometimes it flies and sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, when you have an inability or lack of desire to communicate, information and details about something that is supposed to be so pertinent about an issue as important as the Second Amendment, you know, I can't imagine why you'd want to not take advantage of that opportunity. And I'll tell you, I think I know now after having my conversation with Doug Funderburk, because I don't think that this bill is all that it's cracked up to be, which, you know, folks, like I said before, you know, we've had leaders in the Patriot Movement who a lot of people that are active in Missouri politics, we all know these names. And we tend to blindly follow because he's a Christian or he's worked actively on this issue or she's worked actively on that issue, so they must be good on everything. I don't really believe that we can take that tack anymore. I think you have to vet out every single issue every single time, take time to read the legislation and think it out for yourself, because I think that there are other things at play here. And I'm going to play this interview with Doug Funderburk, and we'll come back and we'll talk about it a little bit after we're done here. But I just want you to notice that the most very basic of questions here on both sides of this issue, from Funderburk and maybe even from Ron Calzone, are not being addressed. And when people put forth legislation into the state of Missouri, you would think that you want them to address what's good for the people, what strengthens their rights, what are the issues that are going to maintain accountability. And those things are not being addressed here. So let's listen to this interview now.
Hi, Mr. Funderburk. This is Lisa Payne-Nager. How are you?
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm fine. I received a notice in the email today about the HB 1439.
Uh-huh.
And this email suggests that you are throwing a wrench into the works, and I just wondered if you would make a statement.
Well, I don't know how I can be throwing a wrench into the works of my own bill. This is my bill. But what we're dealing with is, and the reason that the penalty provision was taken out in the House version before it was sent over to the Senate was because the legal counsel that I seek, who is also someone who's nationally recognized as being a constitutional expert, was clear in that a penalty provision would guarantee you a court challenge and would not survive that court challenge. And then what you have now is another court case that ends up with a decision by a judge who, after looking at this bill specific at the federal level, would be a very unfriendly decision. But now that decision becomes a part of case law, which could inadvertently, potentially, give especially federal agents more authority within the state. So I didn't want to risk that. When we know the provision will be challenged, we know that we'll lose the challenge. Even with it being severable, like I've taken it from the original bill and made each section severable, I just didn't want to risk what we know is going to happen and the possible potential results. So we still have the civil course of action in the bill, which I think would be the law-abiding citizen's pathway to justice if their Second Amendment rights are violated, and that provision, we're confident, would survive a court challenge. So, and beyond all of that, until we have some protection for citizens codified into Missouri law, Missouri citizens, like they are having to do in California and Utah and other states right now, are going to have to challenge the federal government if their rights are violated on their own dime in their own time, whereas if we have protections built into the law, like I'm trying to get into the law, I have been for 2 years now, Missouri will be responsible for defending its citizens if it's deemed or determined or believed that their Second Amendment constitutional rights are violated, which hopefully would mean the Attorney General would step in.
Okay, so why wasn't it put in the bill in the beginning to be able to protect Missouri citizens? Why? I mean, the whole point of this bill is to bring, you know, more – it's a state sovereignty issue, basically.
You're absolutely right. It is more a Tenth Amendment bill than it is a Second Amendment bill.
So why wasn't that put in the bill originally for the state of Missouri to defend its citizens against prosecution?
I'm not following you. It's always been in the bill.
Oh, I thought you just stated before that it was not in the bill. I'm sorry. Do I misunderstand?
No. The Second Amendment Preservation Act is the origins and the foundation of the bill. There's been a lot of things added to the bill through amendments. You know, I know you understand how this process works, but you know, when a bill goes through the process, people look for bills like this that they want to attach similar issues that they support to. Those amendments, you know, have added a lot to the bill. But the underlying core of the bill is the Second Amendment Preservation Act, which has always been a bill that would be, if codified into law, would position Missouri to protect the rights of its citizens should they be violated, and not just by the federal government, but by state law agencies as well. So, excuse me.
So it's your contention, you know, we made the point that this is really a state sovereignty bill, and the issues with, I think what Ron Calzone is trying to say, is that basically the provisions that were in the bill, I mean, you know, a misdemeanor issue for the violation of this bill, I mean, that's nothing more than a slap on the wrist, and that was taken out of the bill early on.
Right. But after Ron received about a two-page response back from the constitutional expert that him and I both consult with, telling him that not only would that provision unconstitutional, would definitely receive a challenge, and we would definitely lose that challenge, and then we would end up with yet even more case law that would hurt our further endeavors and possibly even give more latitude and authority to federal agents within the states. So Ron received that same information. He's aware of it. And Ron's response to me was, well, then I would rather see the bill die before that provision comes out. And I told him, I said, well, Ron, I'm not ready to throw out all the other wonderful provisions in this bill just because that one is not going to survive a challenge based on the advice him and I both received from the person we both trust to give us that information.
Okay, so let's talk about the ineligibility clause that it seems to be that people want to have remain in the bill. Why do you want to have that taken out of the bill?
Well, that was whenever I took the penalty provision out and we passed the bill out of the House, you know, Ron just went down to the Senate and concocted this new provision and had it put in. And this is a far worse provision as far as punishment than a misdemeanor crime. A misdemeanor crime is not much more than a traffic ticket.
Right. So, but I think
now
that's
telling
point.
Someone that you, if you violate a provision of this law, you would now have a lifetime ban from your profession. That is a far worse penalty. So it will definitely be challenged. Once again, we'll be taken into court. We will lose that court case.
How do we know that we'll lose that court case?
Because the legal experts that we both consult have told us that.
Okay, so, but isn't, okay, so just playing devil's advocate here, isn't the whole point of bringing forth legislation like this, state sovereignty legislation, to challenge the authority that has been working against the sovereignty of the states?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
and the bill without that provision still does.
Okay, so how does that work?
Okay, so like I told you earlier, as it exists today, if let's say the black-booted thugs came and kicked down the door of my house and took my guns.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And they did it based on their interpretation of a federal rule that they feel gives them the authority to do so. And I say, you have violated my constitutional rights. I have not committed a crime. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I legally own those firearms. I, as it exists today, I have to challenge that federal agency. I have to sue them. I have to go to court on my own dime and on my own time.
Right.
If we pass the Second Amendment Preservation Act, even without this penalty clause, now the state of Missouri challenges the federal government, protects my rights, they adjudicate the court case on their dime and their time. They protect the citizens of this state. So faction still there. That's the whole purpose of the Second Amendment Preservation Act. And then further, the course of civil action clause is still in the bill. I can even sue in a civil court for compensation for my losses of that federal agency. So you have the ability of the state to defend me in court and protect my rights in the bill still. And you have my ability to sue for monetary compensation ability still in that bill should a federal agency violate my rights and cause me monetary loss. So I understand where Ron's going with this. Ron has been clear since this whole question came up. In fact, Ron was the one that went back to the council that we consult with and asked to pose him the question to him. And when the response came back, Ron came back to my office a little contrite, a little bit ashamed, but said, "It looks like you were right. And the legal expert agrees with you." And then he picked up and went down to the other end of the building and started working on putting the penalty provision back in the bill, and has since told me, "I would rather see the entire bill die than to not have that penalty clause in there." And this is where him and I part ways. I would rather see as much of that bill become law versus none of that bill becoming law. So this is where Ron and I, our desires and our tactics separate ways.
Okay, I have a couple questions. I want to follow up with that then. Okay.
Okay.
One of those questions is, you know, a lot of people, you know, the citizenry of Missouri kind of takes a stance where we look at things where there are no penalties for government almost at any level to receive consequences for bad acts.
So if I can sue the federal government and they have to compensate me if I prevail, how is that not a penalty?
Okay, leads me to my second question. Okay, so what are the steps in pursuing the – do you have to get the blessing of the attorney general to get that done? Can anybody do that? What are the
– anybody can file a lawsuit.
So
for any reason,
and the state of Missouri
has to be but before you can prevail in a lawsuit, there has to be a basis of law that determines that your lawsuit and your claims are valid, and this would do that. This would provide that for Missouri citizens.
And the state of Missouri picks up the tab for that filing of a lawsuit. Do we not have to meet certain criteria? Does someone have to give their blessing to allow that lawsuit to go forward?
It would be my hope. I can't force the attorney general to do his job, it would be my hope that the attorney general would be the one who is adjudicating this civil court of action.
But it is up to the attorney general whether or not a lawsuit like that would take place. Is that right? And that's
whether or not that he's going to adjudicate it. I mean, again, you could do it. You could do it as a private citizen.
Uh-huh. And pay for it on your own dime. But the state of Missouri will not cover that. It's up to the attorney general whether or not.
That I can't say that would or would not happen. I can't presuppose the decisions that are going to be made based on a new law. That's not a fair characterization. You don't know until the law is in place, and then.
That's not my question. My question is, who decides whether or not that kind of case becomes adjudicated? What's the hurdle for the American citizens to seek justice in violation to? I think that's the whole. I think that's what this boils down to.
Right.
What's the hurdle there? I think we're trying to eliminate the hurdles for American or Missouri citizens to seek justice when their Second Amendment rights are violated. And if we're going back to government entities to pick and choose winners and losers, and there seems to be no consequence for the government to receive consequence if they commit bad acts, if we have to go to the government to get their blessing to file lawsuits, we're still hamstrung. This bill does us no good. Is that – am I misleading?
Well, you don't have to get the government's blessing to file a lawsuit.
Yes.
I don't know where this is coming from, but you don't have to do that today.
Right.
But what we're talking about whether or not we file an individual lawsuit or whether we get the state of Missouri to pursue action against the federal government for violating the rights of Missourians. Which,
that's correct.
I mean, and my question to you is, with the structure of this bill, if you take out this clause, then we are again beholden to...
back up. That clause has nothing to do with whether or not the state is going to defend you in a civil court of action.
Right.
Of action. Has nothing, there's no nexus there whatsoever.
Okay, but it does...
So that clause doesn't impact whether or not... I mean, the governor of Missouri, the Missouri Attorney General, the Missouri General Assembly could view and support or oppose.
Sure.
Whether or not they want to support... they want to defend a private individual's individual right. And that has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not there is a criminal penalty provision in the bill. There's no connection whatsoever.
Okay. And your legal experts are telling you that this clause that you're trying to take out of the bill would be challenged. We would lose definitely. There's no question that we would lose on a challenge. And it would create case law. Okay, so what do Missourians do when they are trying to seek sovereignty? You know, basically what they're doing is they're trying to seek sovereignty issues to be put into bills where the federal government does receive consequence, where the players in these instances, you know, these in this case law enforcement officers who are committing these bad acts supposedly against Missourians, we're looking for consequence. How do we get that?
Well, the civil course of action can be on the individual agent themselves. So believe me, their feet will be held to the fire by this potential of them suffering a financial loss if in their own zealous attempt and desire to carry out their orders given to them, that they knowingly violate a Missourian's Second Amendment rights. So, I mean, I don't know how much more concerned a $50,000 a year federal agent can be than to think that they might be slapped with a $300,000 lawsuit or potentially even a multi-million dollar lawsuit on them and on their dime if they on their own decide to go beyond the orders given to them, beyond the legal constraints that are afforded them, and decide to on their own violate someone's right, which is what we're trying to protect.
Right.
Okay. So I know. Well, let's put it this way: when I'm not serving the Missouri Legislature, I'm a blue collar working guy, and if in the course of my performing my duties, I would have to be concerned that if I skirt the requirements and rules on how I do my job just because I desire to take a shortcut or something that's more convenient for me, that I could potentially be sued personally and have my personal finances impacted by that, I am going to very, very seriously consider whether or not I want to take that shortcut or violate the very rules that I have over me and how I perform my duties. So,
very specifically, is it true that law enforcement officers acting under this jurisdiction are not indemnified?
That I don't know. That question has never been asked. I quite frankly have never given that thought. I'm not sure.
So if we don't
know. I know when a state law enforcement officer works in conjunction with a federal agency, they're typically, in most cases, they are deputized by that federal agency, and then while they're working on that joint task force, they actually are a federal agent now. They're no longer a state law enforcement officer. So I'm not sure, but I'm not sure in either case how they're indemnified.
So isn't that what this bill is trying to do, is to take the indemnity away from these officers who violate Second Amendment rights?
That discussion has never been brought up, no.
Really? It's never been brought up?
Never.
I would think that would be...
I have not had one discussion over indemnity, not even with Ron Calzone, much less anyone involved with this bill in 2 years.
So, I mean, to me, when I read this, I mean, that is the key to this entire bill. If you're trying to keep, if he
where is indemnity even addressed in the bill?
It's not, as far as I can see. But if you're
okay,
looking
so how
for no, if you're looking for, if you're specifically looking for consequence to these actions, you're trying to make these people responsible for their actions for violating, you know, and if they're indemnified, if they're not touchable, you know, and if they can go ahead and commit all these violations against the Second Amendment against Missouri citizens, then what's the point?
Am
I missing the point?
You can keep building this case that you're trying to build, but now you're into an area that has never even been discussed, is not part of the bill. I guess you're trying to make a Ron Calzone point, whether I like it or not. I guess I can't stop you.
No, I mean, I don't, you know, Ron Calzone will not talk to me. So he's there's some issues with Ron Calzone that are clear, you know, that I'm not hearing about. So
right.
I can only
but I'm just trying to tell you that indemnity has never even been discussed with okay. any of the legal experts that I'm dealing with anyone in the House, with anyone in the Senate, with the bill that I filed last year, in any of the public discourse, any of the public debate. Indemnity of law enforcement officers has never even been discussed, is what I'm trying to tell you.
Okay, so because I'm obviously missing something. Please inform me. If this is a state sovereignty bill, if we're trying to secure and protect Second Amendment rights for Missourians that are violated by the federal government, you know, if they come in and put a boot on your neck, take your guns away, I would think that would be germane to this entire discussion. What am I missing here?
I don't know. Maybe you should have been part of the discussion, though, because it's never been discussed. It's never been brought up. I'm still trying to connect it to – I'm trying to find its relevance here other than, you know, if there's – I guess I'm going to assume anyone who works in law enforcement is indemnified in some way, fashion, or form.
Right.
But that still doesn't prevent them from being sued or prevent them from being challenged to have violated a law or a constitutional right. I just don't even know where I'm – I don't know where I would, that would be my concern. In this bill, and again, now I'm just kind of thinking out loud, but I mean, it's a good question, don't get me wrong, but it's just never been discussed.
I'm shocked.
So
I'm shocked.
Well, don't be, because after working in this building for 8 years, there's oftentimes we get so focused on the minutiae of certain issues that sometimes things are just kind of left out of the discussion. But of the tens, if not hundreds, of people have been involved in this debate and actually in helping craft the bill. None of them have ever brought it up. So, and I'm not.
Okay, so maybe I'm on the
wrong track. Maybe we should have that conversation, but it's not going to happen in the next 2 weeks.
No, I understand that. So, okay, so maybe I'm on the wrong track. Maybe you can put me back on the right track, because what is the end result here that you were hoping to get
that the state of Missouri would be that it would be codified into law that the state of Missouri is responsible for defending its citizens should their Second Amendment rights be violated.
Okay, so and just to wrap it up, under what you see is happening in this bill for the next 2 weeks, they will be codified under the state of Missouri to be defended by the state.
Yes.
Okay.
We just won't have a criminal provision or a punishment provision in the bill for the law enforcement agents themselves.
Okay.
It'll, there'll just be a civil course of action.
So a monetary reward.
Right. And let me tell you, this is almost kind of like the discussion about voter fraud. What this bill will give us that we don't have today is a yardstick to measure the performance of law enforcement in regards to the Second Amendment rights of Missourians. We really don't have that yardstick today. Just like when we talk about voter ID, and I don't know whether you support, you know, voter ID or not, I do. One of the reasons that we don't have the ability to determine whether or not there is voter fraud happening is we have no way to measure it. We have no way to say, look, we can prove there's voter fraud because the identification of voters is not being made in certain precincts or districts, so we know, therefore, there is a problem. Well, since we don't have a yardstick to measure voter fraud, how would we ever know there was? Well, this is kind of how I see this bill, and this is where I've ended up in the conversations with the folks in this building who are concerned about penalty clauses, is that we'll, at least we'll have this yardstick so that if we start measuring the performance of law enforcement and find out, in fact, that law enforcement is overreaching, overstepping their authority, and possibly even going into the extent of violating someone's individual rights to keep and bear firearms, maybe then this legislature will go back and want to consider how do they further deal with those egregious violations, which we don't even really know is happening today in Missouri.
Yes.
Without this bill, we take away one of the better measurements we would ever have to actually make those judgment calls to begin with. So, you know, I'm not happy that we have to take these provisions out. I'm not at all. But I'm a realistic enough person to know that if nothing happens this year, another 2 years have gone by where we have not been able to codify anything into law to further protect the Second Amendment rights of Missouri citizens. And Ron Calzone is willing to go to that extent. I'm not. I want to accomplish something rather than nothing.
Okay, thank you, Representative Funderburk. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I hope you'll come back and help me wrap this up maybe after the session to find out what's happened.
Sounds good.
You're termed out at the end of this session.
Yes, I am.
And you're running for county executive in St. Charles County against Steve Ellman.
Yes, I am.
So we should actually maybe part. We should probably continue this discussion as part of your campaign, too. I understand that St. Charles County is acquiring MRAP vehicles, so maybe that might be part of our discussion in the future.
That would be another even more interesting conversation.
Okay, thank you for your time.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Talk to you, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Absolutely unbelievable. Folks, this is just the best illustration that I can present to you about how the folks in Jefferson City and maybe in your state capital, certainly Washington, D.C., have become masters at sidestepping an issue, doing something to and accomplishing nothing, protecting their own, absolutely waiving any consequence for anybody who is in a position of authority, who breaks the law or tramples all over your constitutional rights. You know, absolutely nothing. Now, if it's absolutely true that Ron Calzone is trying to keep in all of these aspects of the bill that maintain consequence, he needs to come on the show and let us know about that so that we can help him reinforce that message. I just can't help but going away from this feeling there's something else going on behind the scenes that it just makes me very uncomfortable. Anyway, so it's very clear, folks, that there's not going to be anything going on in Jefferson City this year to strengthen our Second Amendment rights. We'll take a break, and we'll come back and wrap it up.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We are hanging it up, folks. We've covered just about everything that we can cover in one night about how inept and absolutely appalling our Missouri legislature is. I certainly hope that you folks in outlying states are not experiencing the frustration that the folks here in Missouri are experiencing. Get on the phone, Missouri Patriots, and burn up the phone lines. Light up those phones tomorrow in Jefferson City, and let those folks know that you are not pleased with all of the money that they spent holding session this time in 2014 for them to not advance some very good legislation that protects parental rights with Common Core, that advances our Second Amendment freedoms, protects protects us from voter fraud, all kinds of things. We'll get back with Dave Court too and get some information on how to help send that message in Missouri. You know, we can rattle a lot of cages by affecting one race, folks. And I don't know if you were watching the news or heard the news. The primaries that went on yesterday, where all of the Tea Party candidates were eliminated in the primary races yesterday, the establishment GOP is gloating over that, and they're setting their sights on the next round of primaries for Tea Party candidates. It is their mission to eliminate the Tea Party, and they have been very effective in neutralizing us since. I'm in the St. Louis area, and St. Louis is one of the places that the Tea Party first came out of. It was born here, you know, with some very strong voices. And I can tell you, it was part of those movements. And during that time, we had Tea Party folks holding rallies. There was a rally under the arch. There were rallies all over the region, and there were just plain folks making speeches, reiterating, you know, the need for constitutional government, small government. The people were behind the podium making the speeches. And the candidates and the politicians were in the audience trying to be part of that. And some way or another, those folks infiltrated the ranks of the Tea Party organizers, and then the politicians were the ones back on the stage. They were the ones who were driving the message. You know, they took the microphone away from the Tea Party candidates, and they neutralized our voice. And now that we have effectively given up the microphone again, they're running the show. They've taken away the power and the momentum that we gained over the first few years of the Tea Party. And I'm telling you, if you want to get it back, it's very easy to do. You just have to become informed and engaged. You have to be willing to make a phone call once in a while, because you got a lot of folks that are giving up their time and their money and their energy, and they're going to these places. They're going to Jefferson City. They're committing themselves to the face time that it takes to get the attention of the legislators. They need to know that they're being backed up at home by you, the voter, who's paying attention. And once the politicians in the elected offices know that it's not just, you know, 50 people or 100 people that they see all the time that have sacrificed their time to go there and make their voices heard, that they're really backed up by all of the folks in their district who bother to vote, and maybe that's what it's going to take. Maybe what the situation is going to take is we're going to have Democrats in office, because conservatives are going to quit supporting Rhino Republicans and establishment Republicans because they're supposedly better than the alternative. I don't see how that is the case anymore. Rhino and establishment Republicans are not better than the alternative. A couple of weeks ago, we had Lee Stranahan on, and he talked about the corruption within the Tea Party movement and how a lot of these Tea Party organizations were collecting money and sinking that money back into the establishment Republicans, and that's what happened yesterday in the primaries. You know, the finances are going straight to, through these organizations, through these shell organizations, they're going to the establishment Republicans. Folks, you've got to take the time. If you're gonna bother to send money in, stop sending money to places who are not transparent about where their money goes. Send your money directly to candidates. Stop supporting these organizations, and become independent folks. Once the Tea Party got organized, it became corrupt again. There were people who rose to fame and, sold out to the controlled opposition, and we're going to talk a lot about that in the coming weeks, what the controlled opposition is. People need to get an education on that, because we are being sold out and sold up the river. I want to thank Dave for coming on and giving us the information about his million-dollar initiative. Thank you to Frida Keough of Missouri Precinct Project. And if you haven't had an opportunity to go to that website, go to Missouri Precinct Project, folks. They are doing a great job there of organizing the grassroots folks and giving them information so that they can be informed individuals and take action as individuals in their community. The Missouri Precinct Project is just doing a fabulous job. We'll be back next week with Cindy McGee. I want you to tune in on Tuesday evenings at 8 o'clock for Cynthia Davis on Homefront. And Dave will be burning up the airwaves Thursday, Fridays, and Saturday nights for the next couple of weeks. And until next Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, this is Lisa Payne Nager, Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We'll be back here next week. See you then.
God bless America, land.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.